Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Brex and Lab. We have made it to the end of the 2024 PGA Tour season. Rex, you are in Eastlake, the culmination of the FedEx Cup season and the Tour Championship for the 30 best players on the PGA Tour this year. A lot to get to in this podcast, from Scotty Scheffler and Xander Schauffele to the restored golf course at Eastlake, which has undergone some extensive changes since last time the Tour Championship was held last August. But first, Rex, Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, met with the media, spoke for about 50 minutes on Wednesday. Biggest takeaways from that session were what, in your opinion?
Plenty to talk about. Before we get to that, though, I just texted you a picture of my setup here. I'm standing outside the media center here at Eastlake because it's a little loud in there and it's kind of crowded, and I don't want Doug Ferguson from the AP to get mad at me, because every time I do this inside, he gets mad at me. So I sent you the picture of essentially where my setup is, and it's really, really precarious. Like, if you can throw that picture up just to show people that if I suddenly go down, the reason behind it is I'm literally teetering my laptop on two Dixie cups over a large drop off. This could not go well at all. But to answer your question, start with Monahan. You're right. He spoke for 50 minutes. That wasn't the number that stood out to me. The number that stood out to me is he talked uninterrupted off his notes for 20 minutes. And the only reference that he made to the negotiations with the Public Investment Fund was exactly just that. He had one, I would call it a sentence, structurally.
It was almost like a throwaway line.
It qualifies as a sentence. It had a noun and a verb, and that was it. And that was all he said about it. This sounded like a man who is starting to feel himself in this process. And I say that because it's clear that whatever the direction of the PGA Tour is going to be, that it's going to be driven by SSG. And this arrangement with this group that was led by Fenway Sports, because the question that I wanted to ask him, he's talked countlessly about the idea of the expertise from SSG, both in sports and business. And we're talking about owners of NFL teams, owner of Major League Baseball teams, owner of NBA teams, how they're going to leverage that expertise to sort of chart the path forward for the PGA Tour. Wherever it is that Piff falls into this, and we can talk more about that, is going to be secondary, at least as it stands right now. It is going to be part of the puzzle, but I'm not getting the impression, or at least that's not what Jay and the rest of the PGA Tour wants to make the impression, that that's going to lead the show. The show is going to be led by SSG and all of the things that he sort of pointed out in that 20-minute dialogue to open up the press conferences. He talked about innovation. He talked about making the product better. He talked about making sure that they were constantly looking forward. Didn't say anything unprompted about the negotiations with the Public Investment Fund. And he's going to adhere to that line that he's always going to adhere to, that he's not going to negotiate this deal in public. And I understand that. But when you talk for 20 interrupted minutes about the future of the PGA Tour, and that's really what it was about, and your only reference to what could be a big part of that is, as you said, a throwaway line, that to me was very telling.
I know this is not a visual medium.
Forget it. I thought you could put it up. That's terrible. I couldn't
figure out how to do it on the fly. But yes, those are Dixie Cups. Yes, we are the Golf Channel. We should have a high-end production. And then we remembered this is just the Golf Channel.
High to production value here, folks.
Ed Lab, you said that Jay Monahan was feeling himself. I said earlier today on Golf Today that Jay Monahan seems, at least sounds, emboldened. The fact that they are going to, quote, do it on their own terms, control what we can control. I think he was at least setting the tone publicly for whoever was listening, whether it was the investors for the Strategic Sports Group, potentially members of the Saudi Public Investment Fund who would be interested in hearing what the commissioner of the PGA Tour would have to be saying, essentially saying, we are okay. And if this deal happens with the PIF, great. We will be even better, not just financially, but also competitively. He talked endlessly about the innovations that could be coming to the broadcast, about how the competitive model is working with the Signature Event Series and the full field events, providing opportunities that way. All that said, Rex, it was very interesting because our colleague, Todd Lewis, asked him, if you look back a year later, is the sense of urgency to get a deal with the PIF higher or lower over the past 52 weeks? And Jay Monahan paused for about 10 seconds. And I was wondering what was going through his mind. Was he thinking, do I have to say that it's higher to put on good appearances, that I'm negotiating in good faith with the PIF? Or does he actually think the priority is lower? Because everything that he talked about in those 20 minutes, save for that one throwaway line, and everything that he mentioned in the question and answer portion of that press conference seemed to suggest that the PGA Tour's in a good place, that they've got momentum. They think their model is working. The players are aligned, all of those good things. And yet Jay Monahan said what I think he has to say in that position, which is, yes, we have a higher sense of urgency to get the deal done year over year. What'd you take from that?
With a monsoon of respect for what you just mentioned, he cannot negotiate in public. I know everyone is tired of hearing that, but that makes total sense to me. The second half of what you said, you're absolutely right. He has to negotiate in good faith, because if not, this is going to come back and turn into a legal problem. So he knows that as well. So everything he says is going to be very calculated and very carefully thought through, as you heard in that soundbite that we played on Golf Today with Todd Lewis asking the questions. You said it was a 10-second pause. I'm going to go higher than that. It felt more like a lifetime as he sort of went through all the different scenarios.
What should I say? He was essentially thinking, what should I answer to this that does not seem like I'm negotiating in bad faith?
Yes, I can only imagine sort of the internal sort of gymnastics going on in his head on that one. Like, oh God, how far am I going to take this? That being said, it is worth pointing out that, again, in his opening remarks, which went 20 minutes, he never mentioned how we would possibly work Team Golf into this new product. He never possibly mentioned how we could possibly bring the game back together, reunite a broken game. He never talked about how you could possibly bring the players who joined LIV Golf. He never possibly said what the product could look like going forward. You're right. I think they're very comfortable with where they are now. And it seems to me the thinking is that if there is going to be a deal, then we're going to have to figure out how that's additive to what they've already established with SSG. And that's, I think, what the message was going to be. I will say the other thing that kind of stood out to me, well, twofold. One, I keep harping on this, but it's worth repeating time and time again. There was a December 31st deadline to get the framework agreement turned into a definitive agreement. That was last December 31st. We're well down the road from that. Go back just a few weeks ago in Memphis. The commission was asked point blank, since the schedule for next year has just been released, is it safe to say that there would be nothing involving PIF and LIV Golf until 26 or 27 was the question. And his response was, yeah, I think that's fair. So we're not looking at anything possibly moving until probably 28 now. And also keep in mind, I didn't mention this on Golf Today, that whatever happens between the two sides, let's say there is a universe where the two sides do find a way to come together and reunite the game, there's going to be a lengthy review process after that by the Department of Justice and the U.S. government, because they don't want even the slightest hint that there is some sort of antitrust violations going on here. So even if there is something that comes up, let's say this December 31st, let's put that as a manufactured deadline, because the commissioner said there is no deadline. But let's say it happens on December 31st. That means we're not going to see any real progress until the next December, if not later. I've been told it's a 12 to 15 month process for the DOJ to review this. We're getting so far down the road. This is almost like when you and I talk about the 2032 U.S. Open and you want to book a hotel room, and I roll my eyes.
The 2052 U.S. Open's already been booked.
And I'm sure you already have a hotel room, but I always roll my eyes when you send me those messages. I'm like, dude, I'm not worried about where I'm staying in 2052. I'm not going to be upright in 2052. That's what this is starting to feel like to me.
But don't you think, Rex, that some PGA Tour officials could be accused of being out of touch on this? Because today they endlessly mentioned, Jay Monahan and Tyler Dennis endlessly mentioned fan engagement, fan involvement, making sure we're thinking our fans first and foremost. That needs to be sort of front of mind. And yet what fans want most are all of the world's best players back together again. Like, that sort of aspect has been lost in this. And yes, you can control what you can control. And those players made the decision to join a rival tour, and now they're potentially relegated to that for the foreseeable future. I totally understand that. But any sort of survey in which you're getting 30,000 respondents for the fans, I can tell you, first and foremost, number one, they want to have all the world's best players together again. When you look at the competitive model of the PGA Tour, which, again, they can talk about all this sort of backroom dealing and behind-the-scenes stuff all they want. What is going to be noticeable to us, what's going to be noticeable to golf fans, is going to be the competitive product week in and week out on the PGA Tour. That's largely going to be unchanged for 2025. There are only very small schedule tweaks as it relates. I mean, the signature events are exactly the same, except for a one-off
for the cricket club, and that's just a one-off.
The Memorial is going back to a traditional date. Otherwise, it's looking virtually identical 2024 to 2025. Jay Monahan said, in response to a question about, is this sort of the future of the PGA Tour? He said, yeah. we think this is working. We're, you know, we're going to keep open-minded about this. But yeah, it's reasonable to expect that this is what it's going to look like. What happened to the sort of fresh ideas that SSG was supposed to be bringing in with a world tour concept or team golf or match play, other formats, other innovations, having, you know, just something different to bring in a wider segment of the fan population that PGA Tour is clearly not attracting now. They can't just get that by having creator classics for the influencers that they're going to be doing on Wednesday at Eastlake. There has to be something more. There has to be something more substantive. And I didn't hear sort of a vision for that. It sounds like it's just basically in a holding pattern until the Civil War ends.
No, and I kind of asked specifically because I wanted to know, like, give me one of these great ideas that SSG has thrown out there. Tell me how you're leveraging all of this expertise that you've talked endlessly about since you signed this deal. I didn't get a very fulfilling answer, if I'm going to be honest with you, because it was a lot of corporate speak and a lot of platitudes, if I'm being honest with that. You probably weren't paying attention because you were trying to make your point. I was not laughing at whatever your point was. I really wasn't listening to your point, if I'm being honest. I was laughing at a line I got in my head as you were saying that, and it just made me, I came up with a joke on my own and I laughed at it. And the joke would be, to your point, you're right. It seems to me they're ignoring the obvious elephant in the room, which is, don't we want all of the game's best players together more often? Did we not learn that?
Probably need to have them back.
And if you look, I mean, the U.S. Open's probably the perfect example of that. To that point, there was a question about the pathway back. I believe Doug Ferguson from the AP asked it. And the commissioner kind of deferred, as he should in that situation, to Tyler Dennis, who is in charge of these types of things. And Tyler Dennis referred to, in this particular scenario, if there was a player who joined LIV Golf that was not a member of the PGA Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour, and Andy Ogletree is probably the best example here. He had no real status on either tour. If that player, what kind of sort of time frame are you looking at for him to come back to the PGA Tour? And Tyler Dennis referred to there would be a 1 year waiting period. And that to me feels like you get a 30 to life waiting period if you break a law, is what that feel like. Is that what we're calling it these days? A waiting period?
A waiting period. A waiting period before we potentially send you to the guillotine. I'm surprised that they have not made more movement on that front, or at least they're not willing to share it publicly, because it really should not take that long to hash out what a potential pathway back to the PGA Tour should look like or could look like.
Well, I understand the complexities of this because you have very, very strong opinions on both sides. One, from the LIV Golf players' side, they have no interest in serving whatever you want to call it, a waiting period, a suspension, timeout, whatever it is you want to call it. They have no interest in that. They have no interest in paying fines. They have no interest in any restitution whatsoever. On the PGA Tour player side, they feel like the LIV players got theirs. How come we're just going to welcome them back? That is a very, very hard line that's going to be difficult to cross.
PGA Tour players are getting theirs too. They're now a part of this first-of-a-kind equity program.
Perhaps. But to that point, and after the press conference, I asked Tyler Dennis this point blank because this came up at dinner last night during our GWA fantasy football draft, which I'm sure we're going to get into later. But the idea of Bryson DeChambeau, isn't made the best player on the planet right now, he's by far the most popular player on the planet right now. So I needed Tyler to explain to me exactly why he will not be eligible for the President's Cup team. He will not be, to be clear. And it's because he's not a member and the President's Cup is only open to members. It's a PGA Tour product. That's why the Ryder Cup is different. That's a PGA of America product. But it was point blank. It doesn't matter how many of those responses from fans, the 30,000 responses, said exactly what you're saying. We need to reunite the game. We want to see the best players together again. This is a very, very hard line that's going to be difficult to negotiate.
And I thought there was a good question that was asked of Jay Monahan, because if they have all this infusion of cash from SSG, if there's now $1.5 billion invested in PGA Tour Enterprises with the promise of potentially another $1.5 billion if they can sort of consummate this deal with the Saudis, what do you even need the PIF deal for? And Jay Monahan's answer was, this is an opportunity to reunite the game again. Again, it does not seem like they're making substantial progress on that side. All right, that's enough of tour politics and bureaucracy.
14 minutes.
One podcast. Let's actually go, Rex, to the Tour Championship. And, of course, a staggered start at Eastlake. Scottie Scheffler beginning at 10 under par. Xander Schauffele, 8 under par. Hideki Matsuyama fresh off the WD last week, the BMW Championship. I heard Todd Lewis report on Golf Today. He said he is not 100%, but is expecting to go. Those are the top three players in the FedEx Cup race. Scottie, third year in a row, he enters the week as the number one seed. The previous two times, he did not get it done. Why or why not will Scottie sort of reverse that trend this week, Rex?
I'm going to do devil's advocate thing. I'm going to do why and why not. Why would be on the side that they have redesigned this golf course. We've talked a lot about it. Andrew Green, who you and I both like and respect and love what he did at Oak Hill and other places, he put his hands on this golf course. It's dramatically different to hear Scotty say, to hear Xander say it. It's just a different golf course. This isn't the East Lake that we're used to seeing, and it'll play vastly different. We'll get into some of those changes later. I think that may or may not factor into why he should, because clearly there was something about the former version of this golf course that for some reason didn't fit Scotty Scheffler's eye and did really fit Xander Schauffele's eye and Rory McIlroy's and others to a certain degree. I feel like those advantages or disadvantages will be mitigated by what Andrew Green has done here. I think the other half of it is he is motivated. Like he got a good laugh out of the idea that is there something about starting with a two-stroke lead over second place on Thursday morning that's disturbing to you, that you don't like? And he sort of laughed it off. Like, of course I like it. Like, I always want to be in the lead. You're going to give me the lead before I hit a shot? Like, yes, I'll take it. It has nothing to do with the way I approach this. I think the telling part will be, and we're going to hear a lot about this over the next 4 days on the telecast, and you and I will certainly talk about it. This golf course is as firm and as fast as anyone has ever seen it. And it's probably as firm and as fast as it's ever going to be because it's new and they haven't gotten any rain. There's no rain in the forecast. Anybody that's been paying attention to Scottie Scheffler really the last 2 weeks will tell you that the putter is a part of the game that's sort of confounding him again, that it's not bad. It's not like he's finishing last in strokes gained like he was at one point last year, but it's not as cooperative as it had been during that run when he won six times in a gold medal. If he gets on a roll and can find some sort of consistency on these greens, I think it could absolutely be his year. But it feels like that's a bit of a big if. That was for and against, by the way.
Yeah, it's certainly, you're certainly playing both sides. Offense. I kind of take exception, Rex. I don't understand necessarily the narrative that Scottie Scheffler has not played well at Eastlake. You look at his record in 2022, he shot 10 under par over 72 holes, not including the starting strokes. He just got passed by Rory McIlroy on that occasion. Keep in mind, Scottie Scheffler had a 6-shot lead heading into that final round, matched the largest final round lead that has ever been blown on the PGA Tour. Also, in his first tour around the golf course in 2020, shot 12 under par. I think it's more, it didn't necessarily not suit Scottie's eye. I think it more just fit Xander Schauffele's eye that much better. He was 20 shots better than Scottie Scheffler over the past couple of years. My big question with Scotty, Rex, is where is his head at mentally? Yeah. And we talked about it last week. I sort of disregard the result. It was such an anomaly when it comes to his strokes gain approach numbers. The first time in 2.5 years that he lost strokes the gate. Like, he clearly just did not adjust properly to the altitude. I'm easily chalking that one up. The thing that really raised my eyebrow was the exhaustion, the fatigue, and the short temper that Scotty showed with some pretty uncharacteristic outburst. You now head to a golf course that you have to learn. You now head to a golf course where, as players have talked to the media center this week, you're going to receive probably some unlucky bounces. You're going to see some balls kick into the rough that makes it extremely difficult to get your ball on the green. And then once it actually hits the green, hits short of the green, hits long of the green, I think you're going to have some bad breaks, whether it could potentially hit short in that soft zoysia and not run up, or whether you try to throw a wedge in there that you think is going to land pin high, and then it just, these greens are rock hard and it rockets over the green. I think that is where you're going to need to sort of borrow one of Xander's phrases, dip into your patience bucket a little bit. And you wonder, after this long stretch where a lot of these players have played what, 6 times in the last 7 weeks, like, where is Scotty? Is he fit enough mentally after playing in 110 degrees in Memphis, after playing at altitude last week, after now playing in weather that's clearly soaked your shirt this week in Atlanta? Where is he at? I think it's going to be a good test for that.
Well, and I asked Scotty about that. The idea that, look, you got the end of the season. I walked through the locker room the other day and I was blown away by how many therapy tables there are in there. It seems like every single corner of the locker room has some sort of therapy table, has some sort of cryo machine, has something to try to piece these players back together. And this season, probably more so than any season I can remember, just because it came to such a crowded crescendo, where you pointed out, I mean, you have guys who probably started at the Scottish Open because it was an important event and went to the Open Championship, had a couple days off. You ended up going to the Olympics in Paris. In the case of Shane Lowry, he went straight from there to the Wyndham, straight into these 4 weeks. You pointed out a very good point that if nothing else, like if we're not going to rotate this event or Memphis or the BMW does rotate for corporate reasons, which we all understand when you start looking at the sponsors of those particular events. But if you're not going to rotate them just for the sake of the players' bodies, that one is a little shocking to me because it was, as you pointed out, 100 plus degrees in Memphis. It's not going to be much better here this week. As everyone who watched last week's podcast can attest, you were absolutely destroyed by the elevation and the heat and the lack of air in Colorado. So you put those three things together, and there's a lot of walking wounded out here. Everyone's got something wrong.
But it's the playoff, Rex. It's the playoffs. It's supposed to be tough.
Sure.
It's supposed to be a grind fest.
And I don't think anybody's making excuses. I think that's exactly what I was just trying to say, that yes, Scotty's got some things he's got to deal with. So do the 29 other guys in this field.
Except Xander Schauffele, he seems to be fine.
He's got stuff.
And fit. And I do also think it's interesting, Rex, as it relates to Xander Schauffele, who has played better than Scotty Scheffler over these past 2 weeks in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Nipped him by a couple of shots in Memphis. And, of course, much better last week in Colorado, where Xander Schauffele once again had a top five finish. Did not help him all that much in the FedEx Cup race. He's still be getting two shots back. But on this golf course, the vibes he has, even if the golf course is different, you think Xander Schauffele has to feel pretty good about his chances. I do think that this will be a good barometer for Xander Schauffele. I talked about it before, where this sort of golf course, where if you have the length, if you have the distance, if you have sort of the apex height on your drives, you can cut it down to size. You can fly bunkers that other players have to either navigate around or potentially lay up short of. And so he has taken it upon himself to add a lot of speed, to add a lot of distance. He's gained 3 miles an hour club head speed. I was shocked looking it up. That is a ton year over year. And that's translated to him now being a top 10 driver on the PGA Tour. This is a golf course in East Lake that's going to be paramount. I also think fitness wise, Rex, it's gaining speed, but also the endurance, how hard he has worked at the gym over the past year. I think Xander Schauffele has been preparing for this battle. I think he is relishing the chance and the challenge of tracking down Scotty, because as far back as the PGA Championship, when he hoisted the Wanamaker for his first major championship, he said, yes, I've got a hook into Mount Scotty and I'm climbing my way up, but I've still got a long ways to go. I think prevailing in not just one, but two major championships this year, and then going head to head each and every playoff event during the FedEx Cup playoffs and outdueling him for the title, I think would bring him potentially even more satisfaction.
I would agree with all those things. And it was fun yesterday to hear Scotty and Xander's take on the idea. They've played a lot of golf together the last few weeks, just being that's the nature of being 1 and 2 on the FedEx Cup points list and the admiration that both of them have towards each other. I mean, it's easy to admire Scotty Scheffler. We've talked endlessly, not just about his talent and his work ethic and what he wants to prove in the game, but just being the type of person he is. Scotty is the kind of guy you want to hang out with. And I think Xander is that same kind of the appreciation that both of them have. All the things that you just pointed out, the idea that Xander has transformed himself under the watchful eye of Chris Como, and just the way he's done it. He's done it in a very smart way. He's done it in a very focused way. And he's put the work in. And I think that part of it is fun. I would tend to agree with you. It seems like Xander has the hotter hand right now. I will say, which would lead to a greater conversation on Sunday night, which I want to preempt here a little bit, I had been leaning into the idea that maybe if Xander were to win the FedEx Cup, that maybe he would get the Player of the Year vote. We've seen how important this particular title is to the membership who votes on this. Xander seemed to put an end to that argument. He sort of dismissed it and said, look, everybody wants Scotty's season. I've had a good season, but everybody wants to do what Scotty did, win 6 times, win a major, win a gold medal. Like, that is the standard, and that's sort of the end of the story.
Which is interesting because the players I talked to last week at the BMW Championship said that Scotty has played the best this season, but in 10 years, they would want to look back and have Xander's season. I think it's a reminder of how important major championships are to a player's legacy. Obviously, we do not need to touch on that topic right now. I know you do not have, Rex, the starting strokes leaderboard in front of you, but who else is sort of front of mind this week? If you take Scotty and Xander out of the equation, you know, who can sneak up and win the FedEx Cup? Who do you think, like Rory McIlroy did a couple years ago, where he started, 6 shots back, made double on the first hole, and then roared all the way back? So either from someone who could surprise, someone who needs a good week with Jim Furyk making his captain's picks for the President's Cup the week after the Tour Championship. Who else? Throw some other names out there that you're sort of keeping an eye on this week besides the top two dogs.
I love the idea of Justin Thomas, who's 10 strokes back, and we all know is a very, very beyond a long shot. But I love the idea that he talked about having not made it to this event last year and knowing what it felt like to watch it sitting on his couch in South Florida. He said he'll take a 10-stroke deficit to start the week because it's better than the alternative is where he was last year. No, I don't think he has much of a chance. So many things. It's not just the 10 strokes. It's everybody that's between he and the lead that concerns me. I'm going to go with Victor, who and kind of take the other side of the coin of what I was just saying about JT. Victor sort of talked about the idea that I have not played well this season. And think about that.
Garbage. He said garbage.
When think about that for a minute, for someone who is at East Lake, and I think by any measure, if you make it to the Tour Championship, you've had a good year. Like, look, Tiger Woods is judged differently. Maybe Scottie Scheffler is getting to the point where he's being judged differently. But if you just make it to East Lake, I feel like that is such an accomplishment. You're one of the best 30 players in the world, essentially, this season over the course of 7-8 months. That to me is surprising. So it leads me to believe that he's driven. We know he's played well, not on this particular golf course, but here in Atlanta before last year when he won. And I believe he's 4 strokes back, 5 strokes back. I don't have the starting strokes in front of me. And that's nothing though. Back. Oh, well, that's still quite a bit. But I think you can make that up if you play clean golf, which is going to be the trick around here. I don't think there's a lot of birdies on this redesigned golf course, but if you can eliminate the big numbers and the bogeys, you can make up ground.
Yeah, Roy McIlroy has shown in the past that you can make up ground with some sublime play. As I look down the list, I'm obviously curious to see what Hideki Matsuyama, his form and fitness look like. He won in Memphis. Keep in mind, he was just a shot off the lead at the BMW Championship last week when he withdrew prior to the start of the second round because of those back issues. Keegan Bradley obviously has a lot to play for. Last week's winner at the BMW, now 10th in the point standings. Will he be a playing assistant captain? Will he watch from the sidelines? Will he sort of shed himself of those responsibilities week of, like Anna Norquist is doing on the European Solheim Cup team? That remains to be seen. We have not heard Rex from Roy McIlroy this week at East Lake, the Tour Championship. I found that very interesting because he's sort of been the front-facing player on the PGA Tour over the past couple years, did not have a pre-tournament press conference. When I talked to him last week at Castle Pines, I made the remark, like, you've played more PGA Tour golf heading into the second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs than you've ever played in your entire career. He strikes me as a player whose tank might be on empty, but again,
bucket's not full.
Bucket's not full. Patience bucket is certainly on E. And Rex, because I am an agent of chaos, how could you not root for the potential scenario of Ludvig Åberg being the FedEx Cup champion without technically winning an OWGR sanctioned event in 2024? That is possible this week, that he could win the FedEx Cup if things align without actually being credited with a victory here at the Tour Championship and shooting the lowest score over 72 holes. So he would not have a win.
That is some small print nonsense.
He could
right
be
there.
The FedEx Cup champion. How can you not root for that scenario? Again, an agent of chaos. Over these past 3 days, Rex, you've had an opportunity to see the golf course that Andrew Green has done. Again, they ripped this place up immediately following last year's Tour Championship. They've rebuilt every tee box, every fairway, every green, every bunker. Scottie Scheffler said it's a completely different golf course. You've covered East Lake for a long time in this Tour Championship. Do you like the changes?
I do like the changes, and I was going to bring this up before when you were talking about a player who could overpower this golf course, and I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I think in the past, the old East Lake, the East Lake last year and going back in the past, that one you could overpower. That one didn't have many choices off the tee. You hit driver or maybe 3-wood sometimes, and you wanted to pound it and hit it as far as you could. Yes, playing from the fairway was important, but you didn't have many options. I think what Andrew has done, what I like the most, is created some angles that weren't there before. Keep in mind, he used the exact same footprint. So even though the golf course is dramatically different, the holes are still in the same position. You just need to go a different way of getting there. Probably the one that immediately comes to mind is number 8, which used to be a really demanding par 4 because you have the lake all the way down the left-hand side. If there was any wind right to left at all, just scared you to death. You were always going to cheat to the right, and there was bunkers and deep rough on that side, and then the green was pretty well protected. He has turned that into a drivable par 4. Now, I only think they're going to play it drivable 1 or 2 days this week, but I even asked Xander about this yesterday, and he goes, in a weird way, it feels like an easier hole now. And he goes, look, the tee shot's not that much different than what it was before, but there's something about the idea of risk-reward that suddenly these players feel more comfortable, whereas before, you were going to hit driver and then probably have a 9-iron or 8-iron in, and you had to hit a really good drive. Now you're going to hit driver, and if you execute it well, you're either going to have, you're probably not going to have a putt, because I can't imagine anybody's going to hold these greens, but you're going to have a decent chip or playing from the bunker on it. That one is fun. And then probably the most important one here, and the first thing I heard when I got on property on Tuesday morning was a caddy ran up to me breathless. Have you seen 18? And I hadn't seen anything. No, what's happening? And he goes, and he points immediately, and I'm going to turn this around because I have a really good angle to show everybody. Here, we'll do it live. So what you're looking at here, you're looking down on the right-hand side for the viewer at home, is the 10th fairway. On the left-hand side, you can see up and over those trees is the 18th fairway coming back. The 18th is a par 5, very similar to where it was before, but they've made the fairway itself more narrow, and it's kind of rolly. It's kind of mounded. So it's really, really hard to hit that fairway. So players realize, because they took out so many trees back towards where you can see the 10th green there in the distance, that if you stand on the 18th tee box, you have a direct line straight over that green into the 10th fairway. And from there, you have a direct line into the 18th hole. And that does two things. One, it takes the water, which is in the middle of the 18th fairway, out of play. And it also gives you a really good angle. And as Scotty said yesterday, it wasn't going to be an eagle hole this week anyway. You're going to be playing for birdie. So this created an opportunity that not just a few players, pretty much everybody in the field was going to do it, until officials informed players last night that running between those two will be an imaginary internal OB line. That if you're playing off the 18th tee and you hit it into that 10th fairway, that will be out of bounds. And they did the same thing on the 6th and the 7th holes. So you get an idea how the redesign caused a lot of consternation among players.
I'm just also realizing, Rex, that you decided to have for your background to this shot an air conditioning unit, a porta potty, and a media tent, as opposed to the 10th and 18th holes at Eastlake. This is why we probably need a producer for this podcast.
I don't think I was allowed to do what I just did. And the reason I turned, the shrewd observers will have recognized that Jay Monahan was walking up the fairway, which prompted me to, because I don't think we're actually allowed to do that. I'm on not the podcast.
I don't think Jay Monahan is well versed in the media rights.
I wasn't going to find out
on site for TV rights. I do appreciate that. I'm a big fan. I did a lot of research. I read a bunch of stories. I saw a bunch of flyovers. Watched a couple of videos. Like, I'm a big fan of what Andrew Green has done this golf course. I've covered this tournament a bunch. I played this a few times. Like, Eastlake and what they're trying to do is the proper thing, because they've taken what was one of the most tired and monotonous tracks on the PGA Tour, and they've made it much more interesting with increased shot value. Like, the fairways have more contour to them. The greens have been almost completely reshaped, as opposed to having like the traditional back to front slope that's into the grain, and the shots just stop quickly. Like, there's no real movement once the ball actually hits the green, which is sort of boring. And you look at sort of the most dramatic changes. You mentioned 8 and making that drivable for at least one of the days. The 14th hole, which was a long par 4 previously, has now been lengthened. That's a par 5. The par 3 15th, one of the most intimidating shots that these players face the entire year on the PGA Tour, is probably even more intimidating. Like, they took out the bailout bunker left, and now it's just like a shaved bank that goes into a collection area. You mentioned 18 with that internal OB, which I think is a really interesting tweak that they're going to have. The slope that players are going to be hitting their second shots into the 18th green now is dramatic. It was always sort of a down and side slope. Now it's even more dramatic, where they're going to have trouble elevating it, particularly to a green that, again, is rock hard. So the bones of Eastlake are the same. But it's so much more interesting. I think the bigger question, Rex, that Xander Schauffele sort of touched on, and Andrew Green did as well, is that time was the biggest challenge that the course architect faced with this Eastlake restoration. You know, just the amount that they were trying to do in what was essentially a 52-week period. They only grassed the greens around Memorial Day. Yeah. This green, or this golf course, has not settled in. And I think over time it will, and I think players will learn to love it. I do sense that there are going to be a lot of frustrated players this week, just because Eastlake is not quite ready for this sort of competition.
I don't know that they're going to love it. I'm going to let time decide that. They're saying all the right things right now. I will give the players credit. I think Xander touched on the fact that what they should have done is just rotate this event out of Atlanta for a year or two. Let it grow in. Let it this product be its best possible self before you present it to the world and the best players. Because if it's not, you're going to end up with players that all they remember was the 2024 championship when the golf course didn't play like they wanted to at all. So that's probably a bit of a whiff on the tour's part. And I will say that as we get further into the week, I think you will start hearing a little bit more frustration from players, whether that be the bad bounces that you talked about, whether if that be the 18th fairway is too extreme. I've heard a couple of the greens a little bit too extreme. And look, I mean, the way Andrew Green described it, he sort of compared it. He wants to do here what Donald Ross did at Pinehurst number two. And that's not to compare the two, but he goes, look, we're going to keep tinkering. Like, there's a couple tee boxes, number nine being the primary example, the par three, that they're not going to use this week because the greens are way too firm. That's 260-yard par three, by the way, on the ninth hole, which is kind of ridiculous. And he goes, if they don't use it ever, that's fine. Like, I don't think he's taken any ownership in this beyond the idea he just wants to do what's right by Eastlake. We're probably not going to get a real read on it this year. By next year, when we come back, we'll have a better feeling.
And the biggest difference with that analogy that he was making in regards to Pinehurst was that when Corin Crenshaw came in to redo that golf course, they did not have the U.S. Open the following year. They had a 3 or 4 month grow-in period, and that golf course was ready for Martin Kuiper. And it's still played wildly different, again, than what we just saw with Bryson DeChambeau winning a decade later. It needs time to grow. I was very surprised that they rushed this as much as they did. I think it goes to show you just how important Eastlake and sort of the identity is carved on the PGA Tour schedule was to have it for the season finale this week. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who is your FedEx Cup champion and why?
I think you talked me into Xander. I'm not quite sure I was there. I was probably close. But listen to you prattle on for a good 5 minutes, and I'm sure you've had plenty of time to rehearse those that take. But I think you talked me into it for all the reasons you pointed out. Everyone's tired. Everyone's banged up. Everyone's not feeling their best. But when you hear Xander talk about, no, my bucket's full, I find a way to keep it full. You're right. He seems to have reached another gear, which will lead to an interesting player of the year debate. Beyond that, I think it could set up next year even better. Let's imagine a scenario where you have Xander and Scotty going essentially head-to-head in all the biggest events to start the year in Maui and then going to Pebble Beach and all those signature events. I think that'd be pretty cool.
He has more firepower. He seems, at least at this point, to be in a better headspace with a little bit more of an edge at this point in the season. My pick as well is Xander Schauffele to win the FedEx Cup title and let the player of the year debate rage on for the remaining 4 months of 2024. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex will be on site at Eastlake for the remainder of the week, filing daily updates. Rex and I will be back on Sunday night or Monday morning, depending on how his flight schedule is looking and the conclusion of the Tour Championship for a recap podcast. And then we'll be back the following week to put a bow on this official 2024 PGA Tour season. Always look forward to doing that. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys later this week. Enjoy the Tour Championship and the end of this FedEx Cup season.
So long, Stanford.